Welcome to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach. I'm Lori Wallach, and today we're going to do a quick update on something that's just breaking on Capitol Hill. We have done two episodes about de minimis, or the Amazon loophole. That is a trade law loophole that currently allows some 3 million daily packages of stuff ordered online, mainly from China, to enter the United States, skirting all of our normal trade enforcement, so the bans on forced labor goods, the trade cheating fines, skirting taxes, and perhaps most scarily, skirting normal inspection. So we have got every day millions of packages showing up on our front porch that we ordered online that are who knows what is in the contents. It's not just unsafe, but it's increasingly a major problem for domestic companies, for domestic retailers, mom and pop shops getting knocked out. And there's a lot of illegal stuff slipping in. So remember, there have been two episodes. If you haven't heard them, go back and listen so you're up to speed. But here's the breaking news. The latest development is, as over time, because this problem started in 2015 when there's a change to this law that opened the loophole from a loophole to like a 20-lane international highway of hell, we now have seen so much stuff coming in every day through this loophole, that really dangerous stuff like fentanyl, like honest to God, illegal dangerous stuff, not just like pretty dangerous stuff like bicycle helmets that don't actually protect your head that are fakes. So this fentanyl flood has led to a lot of police organizations and families of people whose kids have had fentanyl delivered to the front door joining this fight that previously had been U.S. companies, consumer groups, unions. And the pressure is so hot that it was looking like maybe the piece of legislation that's a bipartisan bill written by a congressman named Congressman Blumenauer, who's from Oregon, who actually historically has been a major free trade leader. He's the guy who's the most senior guy in the trade committee in Congress. That guy, with a Republican partner, wrote a bill that would try to close this loophole. And it was a pretty smart bill and really sort of clean and enforceable. So everyone thought, woohoo, that might actually move. And then the Republicans, who lead the committee, they're the majority in the House, so they decide what does and doesn't get to the floor, they announced they're going to mark up bills. What is a markup? That is just a way of saying processing a bill in committee to get it ready to go to the floor. So the process of a bill is someone writes a bill, any member of Congress can, you put it in, it gets referred to a committee. The committee has to deal with it, otherwise it just sits there swimming around in a big barrel of bills. So for a markup, that's the first step to get to an actual vote for something to become legislation. So they announced a markup and everyone thought, ooh, they're gonna do de minimis reform, excellent. And then there's this incredibly cynical detour. And instead of doing Mr. Blumenauer's bill with his Republican partners as a bunch of co-sponsors, they come up with a different bill from a congressman named Murphy from North Carolina that basically is a dead-end bill that pretends to fix the loophole but actually would make no difference. It's a totally unenforceable bill. So Mr. Blumenauer's bill just says, hey, no de minimis imports from a certain list of countries that basically meet criteria. And that would just cut out the imports from China, which at least for a year or two would mean a huge difference in the stuff sneaking in. Now, the Republican bill looks pretty smart on paper. It says, let's not just ban everything coming from China, but let's ban everything that is actually subject to trade cheating fines. And there are a whole different set of statutes under which stuff that's subsidized or is forced labor or whatever is supposed to be kept out. And the way you're supposed to be able to distinguish that, and the Murphy bill does this, is you look at the tariff line, the category of the good. And so here's the complicating factor. When you practically have 3 million packages coming in a day, even though on paper that sounds good, how the heck are you going to distinguish between, say, the 3,000 categories of goods that are subject to those penalties, so they should be kept out, versus like the, you know, 3,000 goods that aren't subject to the penalties that can come through? It makes it really unenforceable. And as the markup was going on, I was in the room, some really smart questions are being asked, like, okay, so if your thing works and we figure out a way to enforce it, does that keep out all the stuff sneaking through this loophole or what? And then the sponsor of the bill has to admit, well, no, even if we can enforce it, it would only keep out 60% of the stuff that's currently sneaking through this loophole from China. So, all right, let's just do the rough math. That still means there's like 1.5 million of these packages coming through. So then like the police organizations and the fentanyl families, you know, start passing notes to the members of Congress saying, well, that's not going to have saved my kid or saved some future family. Because if it's still 1.5 million packages, even if you can enforce it, you still can bury the illicit stuff. There still are all these packages that are skirting taxes and inspection. So even if it worked and you could stop the trade cheating stuff, but then, of course, the better question got asked, which is, how the hell are you going to actually enforce it? If the best case scenario, if it's enforced, is it only catches 60% of the stuff in the loophole, how are you going to enforce it? And then you realize it's just not practical. Number one, you're relying on folks in the other country to put down the right tariff line, the right identifier. So there's going to end up being like a list of all the like lines that can get in, and whatever's in the package, they're going to be using those lines to try and sneak through. Because if you have people who are criminals who are sneaking in fentanyl, they're not going to admit, hey, this isn't one of the packages that can come in. So basically the bottom line was, as the debate played out, it became clear, A, if it worked, 40% of the stuff would come in uninspected, untaxed, and have all the dangers to fentanyl poisoning, to unsafe products, to hurting U.S. manufacturers and retailers. But then number two, you wouldn't even get the best case scenario because you couldn't enforce it. So then what happens? Well, this is what's the heartbreak, because there were some Republicans who were asking good questions, as well as Democrats asking good questions about these problems. In the end, the bill gets passed out of the committee on a party line vote. 24 Republicans voted for it. All 18 Democrats voted against it. So party line means all the Republicans vote one way, all the Democrats vote another way. And basically, as compared to having a discussion about what's the best policy, they never let Blumenauer's smart, enforceable bill even get a debate. It was just sidelined. It was offered as an amendment. It was smacked to the ground. It basically stuck into the recycling bin. And then this bill, it doesn't do anything, despite it being aired that it didn't do anything, gets passed sort of like as a political thing. And I have to say, it was really heartbreaking. As someone who's really studied what this de minimis loophole means, and now having the families of the kids killed by this fentanyl being slipped in through this loophole and literally being delivered to people's front porches, it's like a heartbreaking thing when you're faced with the possibility of actually fixing this thing on a bill that has bipartisan support. But then what happens in this markup in this committee is it's like worse than not doing anything. They did such a cynical thing because they basically did the thing where they can pretend they fixed it. But it's like worse than not fixing it. It was really heartbreaking. And I wanted to send that update from the committee because it was super confusing. But as someone who sat there and watched this whole thing play out, I recommend you go back and listen to the other podcast episodes about de minimis, please, to get informed if you already haven't listened. And if you have listened, and now once you get up to speed, I'm going to be on top of this. Because it's not a dead letter. So what does it mean when it came out of committee? It doesn't mean it's going to the House floor, because for a variety of reasons related to the general chaos in the House of Representatives right now, if all the Democrats are against it, maybe it can't even get a vote, because the Republicans can't exactly control the floor with their small margin. But it's probably going to pop up in the Senate. And de minimis, the fix, may be the only damn trade thing that gets a vote and gets passed in this Congress, because the problem is so acute now, there really is a bipartisan sense of urgency to do something. So I'm going to be on it for you guys, trying to find out if actually they're going to fix the damn problem. It was just really heartbreaking, and that's why I wanted to give you the blow-by-blow. And again, I promise to send another update if anything starts to move on this one way or the other. But thanks for listening. This is Lori Wallach from Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach.